attention, please. For the first time ever, the following will be presented in Screamovision. Screamovision heightens your experience by prompting you when to scream. Let's try it now.
Scream.
Good. And now we proudly present the following in Screamovision.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first annual Streaming and Screaming Halloween podcast. I am Freddie.
I'm Art.
And I'm Jesse. And we are here to talk about even more spooktacular horror films for this year. We've already done our Shocktober Halloween Spooktacular, and this time we're going to focus on movies that are specifically on Netflix streaming.
Which now,
we're not sponsored by Netflix in any way, so don't get any ideas or anything. It would be nice if we were.
Hey, if they want to sponsor us, we're not going to say no.
But I don't know. After the problems I encounter trying to watch these three films,
let's
just jump
to Hulu. Yeah, have a bit more.
Maybe we should switch over. Yeah. Hulu would be a good sponsor. Actually, anyone would be a good sponsor, but so that's for a whole other podcast.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast about how we're not sponsored by anyone and try and get sponsors.
But the three films we're going to talk about for this Streaming and Screaming podcast is Intruder, Kronos, and I Saw the Devil.
You did? What happened?
Bad stuff. But we're going to get to that in a little bit. First up, we're going to have Art tell us all about the movie from the 80s, Intruder.
A movie that, would you say, less than 10% of people would know about?
Well, you have to be a big Bruce Campbell / Sam Raimi fan.
Yeah, which I am. I grew up on, you know, Evil Dead and Army of Darkness and, you know, Dark Man and all that stuff. And so I had heard, you know, seen Intruder, the name, pop up a few times, you know, just because Bruce Campbell's in it. Sam Raimi's acts in it, actually, and Ted Raimi.
Yeah.
And,
the Raimi brothers.
That's all I really knew about it. And it had, you know, in the past, I don't know, year or so, Netflix has been just acquiring titles, like, left and right. And so
losing customers, acquiring titles.
That's the Netflix model.
So we chose these three because we want to do, you know, kind of more serious horror films. If, you know, if you're wondering why these three, we just kind of made a list. And then I chose Intruder because I had always been interested in it. And then the other two, we'll get to why we chose those. But anyway, Art, tell us what Intruder is all about.
Intruder is the late 80s movie, horror film written directed by Scott Spiegel. If you're a big Evil Ted 2 fan, you'll know that he's the co-writer. And it has that sort of communal aspects to, like, the first Evil Dead movies have, which is like it's just a bunch of your friends getting together and just making your own horror movies and all that kind of stuff.
Like, it seems like when watching this movie, they got the idea for it just because of the location. It was like they saw a supermarket that was like, oh, hey, this would be kind of creepy to shoot a movie in. And then they somehow got the location, and then he came up with the story and then just shot it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the case, but that's what it feels like when
you
watch it.
No, I mean, that is. Spiegel used to work at this Michigan supermarket, and he just made a movie about it.
So it's kind of the same origin story as Clerks, almost, as, you know.
As effective?
Not quite. But didn't really launch this guy's career. He went on to do the sequel to From Dusk Till Dawn, which was straight to video.
Texas Blood Money.
And now, most recently, he's doing, we've all been waiting for it, Hostel 3, set in Las Vegas. So, I mean, he does have a career, but he's not like, you know, like John Carpenter, where he started doing horror and then
started doing crap.
Or Sam Raimi.
Maybe that was a bad example to choose John Carpenter.
Yeah. Sam Raimi would be a better
example. Yeah, Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi has done horror.
I mean, he's moved on from horror, but yeah.
No, I understand. So pretty much Freddie chimed in about not the greatest movie in the world, and it is. This, I guess there's good intentions, there was a good idea, but I do believe that a good idea, poorly communicated, is a bad idea, and this is sort of what we're seeing here. Like, I don't want to be like, this movie sucks, don't watch it, or if you're really late and you need a Halloween movie, go on Netflix streaming and watch this movie, because, I mean, as a pitch, because obviously it's one of those things like you have to be a fan. You have to be a Sam Raimi fan. You have to be – and you're not really – and it's not Sam Raimi. It's just Sam Raimi and his friends kind of working together. Like, Bruce Campbell's in it, but his cameo is like not even 5 minutes. Am I right?
Yeah, if you just want to see Bruce Campbell in it, just go to the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's where he shows up.
I knew he was going to be that character, too, or playing that type of character.
I was hoping he'd actually be the, you know, the guy with the axe.
Yeah. I kind of thought about that for a second, too, but I'm like, eh, it wouldn't make sense.
And some guy that you haven't seen for the entire movie turns out to be the killer.
Why not? I mean, that's what I was thinking. I when I saw this, like midnight, it just seemed like it was just a stream of consciousness kind of movie. Just things just happening. It's just slasher in a supermarket. I've never seen that before. Why not? If you've seen a slasher movie, you know exactly what's going to happen. It's
very predictable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
they show shots of what's going to be used as kill devices many times before they're used.
Yeah.
So it's like way wink nudgy type thing where it's like, oh, hey, this is going to be used. Hey, look at this. Meat saw.
Yeah, the bone. Yeah, the bone saw or all that stuff. It's just like, why is he zooming in on this for like 15 seconds? Oh, that's why, because he's going to be dismembered by it. You know what it feels like? Student film. I mean, easily.
Well, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
that's what Evil Dead had. They had that same kind of feel to it, but it just worked. You know,
it just had all the awesome moments too, with you know the stop motion scenes and the.
So good. Well, Sam Raimi, he's a different type of director than this guy is. You know what I mean?
This Scott Spiegel does use some very interesting camera angles throughout this movie.
Yeah,
points of view of like the phone or the floor
or a dead body. Did you notice that one? He did a point of view of a dead body. I got a dead body have a point of view.
It felt like everything needed a point of view. Every single object needs a point of view.
When she fell out of the car, that was the point of view. But yeah, there was some really – or one of my favorite is when the guy is looking at the door where the doorknob is turning.
Oh, and the cameras.
And then it snaps back. That was fucking great. But
it's not fluid at all. It's very
It's very – very jittery, but like it's funny how we're saying this guy, this girl, because honestly I don't remember any of the character names because they didn't stick with me at all. I don't even remember the main female lead's name.
Jennifer Ross.
You went the last name too. Wow.
I think the greaser guy was Greg,
sure,
or Gary, or something.
Oh, no,
like
Craig, her ex-boyfriend.
Craig. Okay, I was kind of close.
So it's like, okay, Craig. So the plot is essentially Craig and Jennifer broke up, but he's kind of like a bad boyfriend. He keeps following her, and he keeps like asking her, why'd you break up? Let's get back together, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, probably. And he comes to the supermarket kind of looking to get her back, and then there's one of the greatest fight scenes ever choreographed.
In history.
At this point, it's fucking amazing. It's just like I love fight scenes from the 80s where like from low budget movies where they like do that thing where they like about to throw a punch, but
they
pause for 3 seconds.
Get back.
Yeah, and they pause and they're like and then throw it and then leave it hanging for like another 4 seconds. And then the late reactions of like and they throw themselves. But Sam Raimi has the best pratfall. He throws himself right in a fucking can of like cans of like food or whatever. It was great.
What is wrong with the 80s? Anyway, so yeah, it's just, and then that's it. And then, I mean, that there's that big blow up, and then you cut to the night crew just kind of, setting up the shop and whatever and all that stuff. There's other stuff too, like the stores being sold and other stuff, but it's kind of like incidental until.
Then someone starts killing off Chloe.
And you think it's Craig, because why not? After his little explosion meltdown thing.
So in case, you know, someone is interested in seeing this, we're not going to spoil the ending. Not that it's the most shocking. I don't think any of us were like, oh my God.
If you are familiar with horror films.
If you've seen like three of these types of movies, you're going
to. Yeah, you'll kind of figure it out really, really early on. Right before people start dying, you'll figure it out. But, I mean, we still don't want to ruin it.
I think the elephant in the room here for this particular movie is the fact that the Netflix version of it, for God knows what reason, is censored. So if you're looking, you know, there's like a lot of – like we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of interesting kills with like a meat hook or, you know, all like countless ways that the killer dispatches of all these kids.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one of the most – oh, the one –
the trash compactor.
Yeah, the guy where he slams his eyeball into the fucking letter thing, like the letter spike or whatever those are called.
Oh, yeah, like in an office where you
– yeah, yeah,
you don't really see those that much anymore. At least
because of that. That happens a lot.
Exactly.
Just getting their eyes jammed right into those things.
But yeah, it's at first I thought the movie was just horribly edited. And,
You know what? It is, even without...
It still is.
It's still pretty badly edited, and I love the parts. I know I mentioned this to Freddie, but there are moments where the music gets to a fever pitch, and it's like really tense, and then it just stops dead. Like, it just cuts off. It's not that it fades out. It just literally stops. Like, the score stops. And it's just the best piece of audio editing I've ever heard in my life.
Cuts like 5 minutes from the rated R version that Netflix is currently showing. There's 5 minutes of gore. And it's the gore that you want to see for this kind of movie.
Yeah.
And it's horrible that you...
I was going to go try it online to find the 5 minutes, but I just didn't feel like it.
Synapse Films just put out a Blu-ray of this, not like, I think it was this month or last month. And, yeah, I really don't know why they
put this on Blu-ray. Just looking.
Well, it is the uncut. It says director's cut, so I don't know if it's different with that. And the art for the cover, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's a shopping bag with like some celery sticking out and then a severed head.
Another great thing is the Netflix cover that shows up when you look for it on Netflix. It's the stupidest cover I've ever seen. Like, it has her, our main character, in the foreground, and then in the background is the shadow of this, what looks like Frankenstein. And then in the tiny corner of the bottom right-hand corner is this guy poking his head out, like, leaning to the side. It's the fucking weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. But I don't know, why is that on the cover, the like Frankenstein monster? Is that supposed to make you think? Because when I saw it, I'm like, oh shit, there's a monster in this movie, awesome.
Were they really trying to sell the movie? I don't know, I mean, the original title was supposed to be like The Night Crew or something. To
that would have been better.
To relate to The Night Crew, who are actually doing this, but somebody, marketing or whatever, wanted more generic. We want more to make it more like a slasher film, so that's why we have Intruder right now.
It's amazing.
Lots of problems.
But yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a little bit of – I mean, once the kills start, it does get a little bit funner. Like, it starts to get a little bit more interesting. But honestly, if you're not watching the uncut version
– there's no point.
There's really no point to watch this. And like we said, Freddie mentioned it, and I agree. I'm a big Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell fan as well. But I was, like, bored as shit throughout this entire movie. And Sam Raimi couldn't save it.
Well, let's be honest. It's not Sam Raimi. Like, it's one of his friends. So it's
now,
like, you're what?
If Sam Raimi directed this, I'd be way more interested. But it's – I mean, you can't knock the guy for his first film. Can't knock the guy for doing something and, you know, having fun with it. But at the same time, I just didn't find enjoyment out of it. So it's hard to recommend for Halloween – to watch, but you never know. I mean, if you want to check it out, it's there on Netflix. So
another film that is also on Netflix streaming that I think we would recommend a little bit higher than Intruder.
Yeah.
And I think as we're going along, our recommendation for these films are getting higher and higher. So the next one up is Kronos, and this is the first feature-length film directed by Guillermo del Toro, who you may recognize that name as the guy who directed Hellboy, Devil's Backbone, Pan's Labyrinth.
Played
too. Many, many other films, many really great films that I think all three of us can agree that we love.
Oh, yeah.
At least one of those, and, you know, for me personally. Yeah. But Kronos being his first, you know, cinematic outing, is kind of a mixed bag.
You know what? For a first film, though, it's pretty damn good. I mean, looking at it, it seems like it is kind of a generic horror film, in my opinion. Even that, it's hard to call it a horror, but like, it's kind of generic, but at the same time, it would be generic if this was someone's third or fourth film. But this is his first film. It looks pretty damn polished for a first film.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what we're kind of getting at with like Spiegel. I mean, Spiegel's first film, fine, you know, whatever. But it's possible to do a finely honed work and understand the genre and throw like a little black comedy into the mix and do that for your first outing. And Del Toro does it.
So the plot of Kronos, this movie starts out in 1535 with an alchemist, Vera Cruz, who creates this mechanism that he calls the Kronos device that gives the person who uses it eternal life. And it's not really clear how the device is used until we go more into the present day and we see an antique dealer named Jesus Grist.
Rice or whatever.
He finds it, and it's within this statue that we see back in 1535. We see it's been through all these years transported through this statue and wound up in his antique store. And he ends up getting his hands on it and like kind of messing with it, you know, the same way that like people on whenever you see like a Hellraiser, they always mess with the box.
Yeah, they mess
the
fucking
and
box.
And the box alone. Opens up, and it's kind of the same idea here with the Kronos device, where they're messing with it, and then something horrible happens. But instead of Pinhead being unleashed in Kronos, this time it's the device kind of sticks these pincers into the person and basically turns them into a vampire.
Yeah,
but it's not a vampire like you think. It's much more – it's kind of more subtle than I think most people are used to
with
vampires, because it's not like he's like – he is allergic to sunlight, but it's not really focused on a lot, and it's not like a really big –
Once. They only mention it once.
And he does have a hunger for blood, but it's not like throughout the whole movie he's going out and killing people for blood. There's just like certain scenes where he'll see some blood on the ground and be like, oh. And it's weird. This movie does have like some very like black comedy elements to it. So going on with the plot, it heavily revolves around this guy Jesus and his granddaughter Aurora, who for some reason barely speaks
throughout
the entire film.
Well, I'm assuming, and this is reaching, that it's because of her parents' death or something. She probably was traumatized from it. So since then, she's probably very, like, shut in, so she doesn't talk much. And the only time that she opens up is with her grandfather.
Right.
That's the only thing I can imagine. But that's reaching, because that wasn't laid out for us, so.
In Del Toro's defense, I mean, I'm not saying the movie would have been better if the little girl just yapped and yapped for the entire movie, but there are some scenes where you think like there's some crazy shit going down and the girl should be like, oh no, grandpa, what's going on? Or like, you know, kind of freaking out. And she just kind of just stands there like silent, just looking. And there's some scenes toward the end. I don't want to give, you know, like we did for Intruder. I don't want to give the end of Kronos away in case you are interested in seeing it. But there's some scenes toward the end where she is trying to help out her grandfather, and you're kind of like, the way she goes about doing some things is like, where the hell did that come from?
I don't know. I like this better than Intruder. I think it's an interesting film to watch because it does take a little weird play on the vampire mythos. I think the best part of this movie, or one of the best parts, is Ron Perlman, which is his first collaboration with Guillermo del Toro, first of many.
I didn't even explain the whole businessman coming after the
Christ. Oh yeah, so there's a whole other subplot, where this dying businessman has been searching for the Kronos device for years, and he's been trying to find the right angel that holds it in the statue, and Ron Perlman's character finds out by a couple guys that it's at the antique shop, so he goes to get it.
Ron Perlman plays the old man's nephew.
Nephew, yes. So he goes to go get it, but the old man had already taken the Kronos device or the antique dealer had taken the Kronos device out of it already, so it kind of starts this cat and mouse game with him trying to get the Kronos device from Jesus so he can give it to his uncle. And his uncle's kind of this very creepy old, you know, maniacal guy who's been searching for the Kronos device for years. And
as much as it didn't seem like he did as – like if he's been searching for it for years and decades or how long, like when they finally find it, like, you know, he goes and they destroy his antique shop, or not destroy it, but, you know, like mess everything up and search for
it. Up.
But they know that he has it. They could easily just go and like kill him and like, you know, go through his house or something. But they never do that in the movie, which I always thought was kind of
– that really makes sense. That's why they can do it. It'd be a shorter movie.
It'd be the movie's over. He's dead and they took it.
Yeah. But Ron Perlman does provide kind of the black comedy aspects of it.
Yeah, his character is a little silly. He wants to get a nose job and he talks about plastic surgery a lot. And
yeah.
One of my favorite scenes is where he's very he likes to complain about having to help out his uncle. And so there's one part where his uncle kind of like – he's like, oh, come up here. I need you to help me with something. And he's like, motherfucker, cocksucker, son of a bitch, pendejo. And then on the subtitles on Netflix, it has motherfucker or whatever for pendejo. I just thought that like – I think we get that he's – you know, I don't know if we really needed to know that, but I guess thank you.
Well, so you another can thing, make fun of your friends later.
It's one of the things interesting about this movie is that it's a mix between Spanish subtitles and just English. You know, and it, you know, pops in and out with only a couple characters that speak English. But
I love when
it was interesting.
Perlman starts speaking Spanish, and then yeah. Yeah. It cuts back to English. It's out of nowhere.
It's very clumsy. Yeah. Like his dialect isn't that great, but it was very funny. The reason why I
preferred it to be one or the other personally, but I mean, yeah, I guess it works, but it was different, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it was a decent movie. It definitely isn't as great as his films would become later on. I mean, like, you look at Pan's Labyrinth and holy shit, it's nowhere close to what this was. You know what I mean?
Right.
So much more leaps and bounds better. But, yeah, I mean, it's an okay movie. If you're curious to see what the early films of Guillermo del Toro looked like, you can watch this. Or Devil's Backbone, that's his second film. You know, that's really well done. But it's pretty good. As for a horror film to watch during Halloween, I mean, it's creepy. It's atmospheric. There are some really good stuff that he does with, you know, the horror aspect of it. I mean, kind of with him turning into the vampire and just kind of creepy special effects and makeup and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, the special effects are probably one of the biggest highlights of the movie, like, for me personally.
Yeah, yeah, little things like that. But overall, I think you'd be better off just watching one of his newer films, you know, or watching one of his, you know, or like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. That just came out recently. He produced that, I believe.
And he wrote it, yeah.
Yeah, he wrote it. That's a great film to watch, I bet, for Halloween. But this, I don't know. I don't know.
If you are interested, the Criterion just put this out on DVD just last year, at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And it has a commentary, a short film called Geometria that Del Toro did in 1987, like a tour of Del Toro's personal office, a bunch of really cool stuff. So if you're like a real, you know, a Del Toro connoisseur or, you know, just you know, a collector of you know, these kind of films, I would say definitely pick up the Criterion.
Yeah,
and don't be fooled of the normal DVD cover, because on the normal DVD cover has a woman with large breasts being the Chronos device. It's not in the movie. Don't be confused or disappointed when you see it, and that doesn't happen.
Get the new cover, the Mignola cover, right? The Criterion one. You could check
That was done by Mike Mignola, yeah.
Yeah, you could check that one out right now on – actually, even if you don't have Netflix, it's part of the Criterion Collection on Hulu.
Well, there's an issue we're not bringing up with the Netflix version. Another Netflix issue.
This is basically our cancel your Netflix, go get Hulu podcast.
For some reason, and I didn't experience this on my first viewing, but on my second, Freddie, you got a hold of me and you were like, there's a weird frame rate issue with Chronos where it's like skipping a frame, it seems like, or something's going on. I watched it the first time and there wasn't a problem, but when I watched it a second time, it was doing the frame rate issue where it's, I guess a lot of people are having this problem.
Yeah, if you go to the IMDb page for Chronos, there's like, you know, like dozens of posts about this issue.
And
people
have
been having it as long ago as like a year ago when this first got put up on Netflix streaming. It had the same problem, and then now a year later, they haven't tried to fix it. So it's pretty.
Now
ridiculous.
I haven't seen the. I don't know if it normally just looks like that.
No. But, it does.
Okay, but yeah, just be aware if you do want to watch it on instant streaming, it does have the frame rate issue problem. And it's kind of – I mean, it's not – I watched it even with it the second time through.
Yeah, so did I.
Yep.
I got used to it after a while, but like starting out, it's pretty – I don't know.
It's a little jarring. Like by the end, I kind of got used to it. But if you want to see it in its – the form it's meant to be seen, grab it on DVD or Blu-ray. Is it out on Blu-ray yet?
It is.
Okay.
Sweet. The Criterion is on Blu-ray, yeah.
Okay, so you can grab it on Blu-ray or DVD. That's the form that's supposed to be seen in. But if you just want to watch it real quick for Halloween, watch something kind of cool, then yeah, go for it. Just be aware it's going to skip.
One film that actually doesn't have any problems if you watch it on Netflix streaming.
Yeah, it looks beautiful, actually, in HD.
Yeah, is I Saw the Devil. Jesse, tell us about it.
I Saw the Devil is a South Korean horror film. Technically horror, quote unquote, and it was directed by I'm going to butcher all these names, and I apologize, but here we go, Kim Ji-woon, and it's basically a film about a Secret Service agent whose wife is brutally murdered by this sadistic serial killer, and he basically goes out to get revenge on the killer, And you probably are saying to yourself, oh, I've seen that movie 100 times. You know, I've seen tons of movies where it's kind of like that. But this one is so different and unique in the way that it's handled. It really has to be watched. It is fantastic. It builds great tension. It's a great thriller. It has some really horrific moments, like with the serial killer doing horrible things. It takes you down roads you wouldn't expect. And the way that the guy gets his vengeance, like the means that he uses, is very uncommon, and it's unique to this film. So I can't recommend it highly enough. This is obviously the best one out of the three.
Yeah, definitely.
Save the best for last.
Yeah, and it's so well done. And the two main actors, I got to tip my hat to them because they did a fucking fantastic job. The two guys that starred in this film were Lee Byung-hun and Choi Ming-sik, were the two the Secret Service agent was played by Lee Byung-hun, and then Choi Ming-sik was the serial killer. But these two guys have a fucking fantastic rapport when the scenes they're in together, and they just play the characters so well. The direction in this is actually very well done. There's some really cool shots, and there's some really great action set pieces. Like, this choreography is fantastic. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to reveal too much of how the Secret Service agent goes about getting his revenge, but it's just it's constant just whoa, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it's definitely edge of your seat. Like,
oh yeah. And
I watched this pretty late, and I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to, you know, sit through this whole thing. And once you're in, and once you get, you know, it gets its hooks in you, like, you're, this movie just, you know, takes off like a rocket.
It does. And it's now, get to be fair, it's over 2 hours.
Yeah, and you don't feel it. Like, watching Intruder for me felt longer than watching I Saw the Devil, just because it's so slow, and you're like, why is this taking so long?
In the beginning, I love it. Hooks you right in the beginning, because the killing in the beginning, actually, it gets you. It hooks you right in. You're like, holy shit, that was horrific. Because, like, the director does this really cool thing where he kind of gets you invested into that female lead character right away, the one who gets murdered. Because she's talking on the phone with the Secret Service agent, who's her fiancé. And just that little interaction that they had between the two of them just really, like, puts enough care into those characters to where
he sings that song to her.
He sings to her. Yeah, it was really, really sweet. And then she dies, and it really makes you feel – and it makes you actually root for the Secret Service agent the rest of the movie. Like, you don't care what he does. And you're like, I'm fucking in. And he does some pretty hardcore stuff. Like, I'm not going to say exactly, because I want people to have that holy shit moments like I did. Because I knew little to nothing going into this movie. All I knew was it was about a guy who gets revenge for his fiance's death. That's it. But I didn't know about the cat and mouse game that they play and all that. And it is really, really good.
Yeah, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but I personally thought the whole movie was going to be him trying to find the guy. I thought it was going to be – he wasn't going to find him until like 2 hours in, and then the last 20 minutes would be what happens when he finds him. But he actually finds the guy within, what do you say, like 40 minutes?
35, 40 minutes he finds.
And that's when it really, really gets interesting, is when he finds him, and you think, well, is he just going to kill him? And then you see what ends up happening. It's just amazing.
And the consequences and the repercussions of that, it's fucking great. And I would watch this. I would totally recommend to watch this closer to Halloween, because it, out of all three of these, it does have the most horrific aspect to it. And the thing that makes it so horrific is because it has to deal with serial killers in a real world. You know what I mean? Like, these type of events could easily happen. And I think
the guy who plays the serial killer just plays him so – he's just a horrible human being. Like, just no – good quality whatsoever.
Like, soul.
He relatives, he's like abandoned them. There's like a subplot with that. So it's like, you know, it really does show the darkness of, you know, the human condition.
Yeah, it shows how far, and on the flip side, it shows how far the Secret Service agent would be pushed. What's the limit that a human would go to feel redemption or to feel closure? You know what I mean? In that type of situation. And it's really, really fascinating. It's a great ride. Throughout the beginning to the end, you're just going to be hooked. I watched it twice, and I'm still – I'm going to see it again probably before the end of the month maybe, because it's so damn good. I can't recommend it enough. I Saw the Devil. Watch it for Halloween. You won't regret it.
And try to do it quick because you never know. Netflix changes their streaming stuff all the time. So it's streaming now as of the time of recording this, October 2011. So if you're listening to this, you know.
Hurry up.
Yeah.
What are you going to watch it for? Thanksgiving? Christmas?
Yeah. Watch Christmas. It's a great Christmas film.
Nothing says Christmas like I Saw the Devil.
Kronos takes place during Christmas, so there you go.
That's true. Place.
Feliz Navidad.
So there you go. I think that about does it for our first annual streaming and screaming podcast.
How do you think it went? Let us know. Contact fourthwall@yahoo.com if you want to see us do it again next year, or what movies you could recommend to us that either are on instant streaming or if they show up, we'll talk about.
Next year we might call it Hulu and Screaming. No. It doesn't have a nice ring to it, but whatever.
Yeah, they're paying the bills. Hopefully.
Are they?
I said hopefully. They? Is that hopefully?
Hulu and Screaming.
Hulu and Screaming. We're so lazy.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for listening. I'm Freddy.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Jesse.
Stay scared.